Welcome to Leading Lines, a podcast from Vanderbilt University. I'm your host, Derek Brough, Director of the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching. In this podcast, we explore creative, intentional, and effective uses of technology to enhance student learning, uses that point the way to the future of educational technology in college and university settings. The podcast is produced at Vanderbilt by the Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications, and the Associate Provost for Digital Learning. When my colleagues and I started brainstorming ideas for a new educational technology podcast, we knew we wanted to feature Vanderbilt instructors who use technology in innovative ways. We talk to colleagues regularly who impress us, and we wanted to share their ideas and perspectives beyond our single campus. We didn't want the podcast to be all Vanderbilt all the time, however, so we're bringing on a mix of guests, some from Vanderbilt and some from elsewhere. In this episode, we feature our first Vanderbilt guest, Corbett Doyle. Corbett is a lecturer in organizational leadership in the Department of Leadership Policy and Organizations here at Vanderbilt. I met Corbett several years ago when she started teaching here after a very successful career in the private sector. She was eager to find ways technology could enhance her teaching back then, and she continues to do so today. I find that she's usually a couple of steps ahead of most faculty when it comes to educational technology, and I'm particularly impressed with how intentional she is when it comes to adopting new technologies in her teaching. There's always a pedagogical purpose to her use of technology, and I think you'll hear that in her interview. Corbett, thanks for speaking with me today.
Pleasure.
Can you start by introducing yourself and telling us just a little bit about your background and what led you here to Vanderbilt?
Okay, so I'm the faculty of the Leadership Policy and Organizations Department on the Peabody campus, and the focus of the courses that I teach are diversity, which is my passion, and strategy and analytics. So teaching people how to use data to drive organizational strategies, all kinds of organizations.
What are some of the programs you teach in or the students that you work with?
So the primary program that I teach in is one of our master's tracks, and it is the Leadership and Organizational Performance track within Peabody. And the focus is really on students who are seeking either leadership roles in education, in not-for-profits, or in startups, or people who are interested in pursuing a human capital career. I also teach, as I mentioned, I teach a master's level course in global diversity, and I also teach an undergraduate class in analytics.
Well, with that as some context, what are some ways that you've used technology to enhance the face-to-face learning experience that your students have here at Vanderbilt?
I use technology in all my courses, and part of that is because I love technology, so I'm always exploring new technology. You know, I hate to mention the year I acquired my first personal computer, but it was 1981, so that was early days for personal computer. So I've just always loved technology and always pushed the envelope in terms of trying to understand how you can use technology. Same thing in a corporate career. I developed the first knowledge-based intranet, you know, for the organization. So trying to capture knowledge in an accessible format on a broad basis. So from a course standpoint, I'm naturally going to look for technology because I have just, my experience says technology enhances effort. And I'm always looking for ways to be more effective and efficient on a combined basis. In the strategy and analytics courses, I have found technology particularly useful in two key ways. One, I'm a huge believer in problem-based learning because I believe people learn by doing. Mm-hmm. They don't learn by sitting and listening to someone talk the whole time. Not that podcasts aren't useful and other methods of oral communication aren't useful. They're just not sufficient.
Yeah.
And so I focus all of my classes on group projects and the students work through in order to solve the problem or create a project, they work through the underlying issues, identifying what they need to know, what they need to do. And I have found a number of technology tools are critical for making that experiential learning effective. And the simplest one, you know, near and dear to your heart, is using polling.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the problems that you encounter as a faculty member when you are centering the learning around the student is that you don't necessarily know what they're learning because you're no longer giving them the content. They're discovering it on their own. Mm-hmm. And while you want that self-discovery, you also want to make sure people are on the right track. So I make extensive use of polling for formative learning purposes, trying to identify, okay, is the majority, so I'll do a poll on a key concept based on where they are in the problem or project they're working on. And depending upon the results, so I do it anonymously, mm-hmm. it's non-graded, no fear on the part of any of the students, and you know, so I'll see what the answer looks like, and then we'll talk through the different answers.
Okay.
And so having this opportunity for the students to see whatever they answered, it's unlikely that they were alone. They
right.
had company.
Right.
We can talk through when a certain answer might be right, the misperceptions that might have led students to pick one answer. And then that allows me to steer the class, you know, do spot, you know, spot learning mm-hmm. and or just-in-time learning and make sure that the class is moving together collectively on an appropriate path. So that's critical, mm-hmm. that use of technology for that action-oriented or experiential
sure.
learning.
Let me ask a quick follow-up mm-hmm. on that. So if you were to take the polling technology out of the classroom mm-hmm. and try to do that same kind of thing, what would be challenging about that without the polling technology?
So the challenge without the polling is that, you know, so when I'm doing that kind of, you know, the group-based learning, I go around the room and I sit with groups and I listen. But you don't hear everyone talking. You don't know what everyone is thinking. And you can't, for every concept, get to every group in the class. So it's impossible to get that insight that is critical to truly making sure that the vast majority of the class is grasping critical concepts and isn't going off in a wrong direction.
Sure, sure.
The other way that I use technology is I now use a whole series of screencasts. So when you switch to this group-based learning, you know, you have all this content you want to make sure they have access to. Yes, they have, you know, whatever reading materials you've assigned,
sure.
but not everyone has different learning styles. Not everyone can learn content, particularly quantitative content they don't like, by reading a book.
Right.
And so I have taken lectures that I used to give on some of the critical concepts, accounting, finance, analytics, and use of Excel, and turned them into a series of screencasts. I've created a YouTube channel for the class, and so they're all on the YouTube channel. I've had TAs create additional ones, some of the Excel, you know, workshops. I've had some of my TAs do. And so there's a whole series of YouTube videos, and the students love it because and I set them up with questions, and then I pause. They have to try to think of the answer, you know, and then
right,
it goes on.
Right.
And they can watch them over and over again if they're struggling with a particular concept. They don't have to get it. It's not once and done.
Mm-hmm.
And so students really appreciate that.
How directive are you with those videos? Do you say, you know, before Wednesday's class, you need to watch these three videos? Or is it more just a kind of general resource bank that students can access as they need?
So I started with, it's a general resource bank, encourage you to watch it. For students who, I do an upfront survey before the course starts to try to test the fear factor for analytics, as well as the experience with some of the different concepts. And I advise students upfront, look, if you are, you know, if your fear factor was 5, you might want to watch these videos all before the first class. But what I have since gone to is recommending certain videos at certain points in the class. So if you haven't watched these or you might want to watch them again, these will be very useful at this point in the course.
One reason I ask is, you know, you hear about the flipped classroom model, which is, I think, more directive, right? Watch these videos and then come to class and we'll do these activities together. But I think there's value in having some direction for students because I think often they're not quite sure where to go with their questions, right? They're in the middle of a problem and they need access to some kind of content that's going to help them solve that. But navigating their way to the right kind of content can be tricky.
At the right time.
Right. And so giving them a little guidance, I think, is often very helpful.
Right. Yes. And I've also moved away from, I know a lot of faculty are very concerned that students might not be reading the assigned material. I've, for the most part, abandoned that. I still struggle on occasion, but I've really come to the position that, you know, my goal is where students are at the end of the course. And if they can get there without reading some of the material that I've assigned, so be it. You know, these are adults, they're young adults, but they're adults. And I'm not going to test them to see, did you read this? And, you know, ask arcane questions. I just don't really care. I'm more focused on learning acquisition.
What does assessment look like in your courses? I'm guessing there's not a lot of tests.
I do use one test in the analytics classes.
Okay.
Each of them. I have one test. It's at the three-quarter point in the course. So all of my analytics classes, graduate and undergraduate, I bookend. Half the class is problem-based learning. So the first quarter and the last quarter. And then in between, it's more traditional. So I try, and I have homework in the middle.
Okay.
And, but the way I do homework is, so the group projects are group-based, but I, all the students, and I use Google Forms. I have the students complete a survey. They evaluate one another in the group, and they distribute 100 points among the whole group, and that forms a weight, individual weight, and that's applied to the group grade. So it might be more than one, it might be less than one, but that's your grade. Everybody knows that going in. So that's a wonderful anonymous tool. It's amazing how much information students will give you on people in the group, good and bad. And then for the homework, the way I do the homework is you do it on your own. You can talk to people before you start it. You have to do it on your own. You come in, they sit in groups, and they share their answers with one another. They make notes on what they would have done differently, and how, and so they rate, you know, they make notes on how they would have changed the answer, things they learned from other people that they thought were more useful. Then I present a sample set of answers, because there's usually multiple ways to approach it. And then they self-grade based on their effort before they got to class, their contribution in the group discussion, and then I grade. And so that's the grade they get on the homework. So that's how I assess it. Yeah. And then the one test is all, it's really case-based. I give them a situation from the news, and I come up with a series of questions, you know, that links to the course content. And again, there's rarely a right answer, and so it's, I'm more focused on how they dissected, you know, the issues, how they tried to understand what the pros and cons were, and then how they put their responses to the questions together. And so it'll be a series of questions that's all, you know, it's all laddering the course content as well as the solutions.
But very applied.
All applied.
All applied. Okay. I'm curious, you mentioned the global diversity course that you teach. Have you found ways that technology works particularly well in that course as opposed to the analytics courses?
Yes. And so I use a lot of group projects in that course, and so there's a lot of group sharing of what they're all doing. One of the things I forgot to mention, in all of my classes, I use this. It's even more important in the diversity class, and it's a discussion forum. I don't like our LMS discussion forum, so I use Google Plus, and I like Google Plus because it's so mobile friendly. Everybody has Gmail, and it's very visual. And so I think that the visual nature is far more appealing. Students constantly share articles. So I encourage in all of my classes, students to, and a heavy part of the participation grade is participating in Google Plus, because it's showing that they're thinking about the content beyond the classroom and that they're applying it to the real world. And in the diversity class, it's a combination of voluntary, and there's, you know, the last 12 months, the volume of information on diversity issues is massive. I was actually teaching the course when Ferguson happened, and we happened to have an African-American divinity student from Ferguson in the class, and he was going home every weekend.
Wow.
And so it's just so dynamic right now because of where the world is. And so the students are constantly sharing information that they're coming across with one another. But then there's also assigned content. So the students all do a group lecture. So they pick a topic of interest to them, and then they teach the course. They learn about it, and then they teach the class. They all have to post assigned readings on Google Plus for the rest of the class before they teach, and they all have to do a lit review table, and they all have to pick one article from their lit review and share the summary of that on Google Plus. So it creates a forum for sharing what each person is learning outside mm-hmm. of the classroom, and in a dynamic arena like diversity and inclusion, it becomes such a robust vehicle for continuing the dialogue and allowing people to express their thoughts and, again, you know, just really amplify the learning. You know, I'm willing to take risks because I like technology and I'm pretty adept at figuring it out. People who don't love technology struggle to figure it out on their own. So, and a lot of students, it continues to amaze me, my own children, I have two daughters. They're both in their early 20s. You know, neither one are tech savvy, despite what everyone says about millennials. And so they come to me with all of their tech questions, right, including for their phones. And I find a lot of students are not as tech savvy as the media would have you believe. So it's important to keep technology simple for students, not just for faculty.
So you've touched on a couple of thoughts on this next question already, but when you consider experimenting with or adopting a new educational technology, what are some principles you keep in mind?
So a key one I haven't mentioned is student reaction to having to go to multiple sites for course content or course activities.
Yeah.
And so this is a frustration for me because I like robust, easy to use technology. No offense to anyone, but Blackboard is robust, but it is not simple to use and it's not attractive. It's not user friendly. So, and it doesn't meet a lot of my needs in terms of what I'm looking for in a technology platform. But that is the vehicle where all copyright protected information needs to be provided. I am trying to minimize my use of textbooks for a host of reasons. One is cost for the students. I just object to the idea of asking students to pay a fortune for the textbooks. So I won't use extremely expensive textbooks. I just won't. There's other sources. You might have to look harder to find them. I am able to find a lot of publicly available sources for content that I want to use, but a lot of content that I want to use, particularly for my diversity course, is, you know, copyright protected material. So sure. It has to be on Blackboard. So I have to use Blackboard for that. And I have to use Blackboard for anything with grades and submission of content. So that's my struggle. And so whenever I'm looking at technology, I'm always looking at how minimizing the number of sources. So it's why I've resorted to Google, because I can get so much on the Google platform, and it's only one other place I have to send students. Sure. And they can get everything else. So they can get the Google Docs, they can get the Google Forms for the surveys that I ask them to complete on one another or for the class. They can use it for Hangout, you know, for, you know, conversations, and I can use it for the discussion forum.
Right.
So that's the key thing that I look at when I evaluate an alternative technology use. Am I going to get pushback from the students by sending them to one more place?
Right, right. No, and I get that, because I find that in my courses too, that I want to use a social bookmarking tool over here and maybe Twitter over here. And I use WordPress for a lot of my activities. So
right.
I try to run as much as I can through my own blog. But yeah, they still need to go to Blackboard for some things too. And so I guess there is this kind of calculus you do where you think, okay, here's a tool that would add a lot, but does it add enough to the experience to outweigh the negatives of having yet one more place students have to keep track of?
Right.
Yeah.
And then what I do to try and compensate for that is make sure I have links for everything everywhere. So they can, if they want to go to Blackboard, I have links for everything we're doing on Google on Blackboard.
Yeah, and I know students, I've heard many students say too, they like the kind of one-stop shop, right? They like to know where all things go. Occasionally, I even imagine, what if a student of mine has four other instructors who are taking the approach I'm doing, and now the problem is magnified by five courses, right?
Correct, right. Yeah. And I hadn't even thought about that, but that's a great point.
Well, let's look ahead for a minute, and if you can imagine the next 3 or 4 years, let's say. I tend not to think too much further beyond that. It's hard to make predictions. And I'm not actually asking you to predict, but as you think about where you would like to see educational technology go, either in terms of its affordances and what it can do, or ways that you'd like to use it in your own teaching, or just kind of changes to the landscape you'd like to see, looking ahead, what would you like to see happen in the world of educational technology over the next few years?
The solution to the problem I just identified. So a very robust, secure digital platform that allowed me to integrate all the kind of tools I want to use, which probably means it has to be a flexible platform because those needs and the tools are going to change. That is highly mobile friendly. And so that would...
Why is that so important?
Because so many students are using their phones the majority of the time. That's going to increase. And because I put such a heavy emphasis on digital dialogue outside of the class. And, you know, when you see something that relates to the course learning, I want you to say, oh, wow, let me share that. And I want you to be able to do it where you are. And most students are getting their news from their phones.
Yeah.
And so I want an easy way for them to quickly share that and right at the moment. Otherwise, it won't happen. It doesn't happen to me. I mean, I'm constantly seeing things. Oh, I want to share that with my class. Well, if I don't have an easy way to do that, I tend not to share it.
Yeah. I'll do this thing where I email myself a link.
So that's when I'm back
in the office, I can post it somewhere. But that's awkward, right?
Right. And that's exactly what I do. Yeah. And I get very frustrated because sometimes I have a long list of to-do links because now I have to go do one more thing.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to share it right then and there as well.
We have a question we ask all of our guests, and it's a little weird, but I'm curious to know how you'll answer it. What's your favorite analog educational technology?
You know, I think I'm going to borrow from one of my favorite technology gurus, namely you, and say that it is a flexible classroom situation because I rely upon group work so heavily in all of my courses. I have to have a classroom setting that facilitates the formation of groups and the easy formation of groups. So that means tables and movable chairs. And fortunately, you know, I teach on the Peabody campus, and all of our classrooms, at least all the ones I teach in, we do have one auditorium, but I don't teach in the auditorium. All of our classrooms have movable tables and chairs. And so we can constantly shift the physical structure of the classroom to meet those needs. And I generally only have students sitting in groups. It just makes it easier.
So you're preaching to the choir here, but for the sake of our listeners, what makes a fixed seating lecture hall challenging for you to teach in?
The problem is that if it's a true lecture hall, the floor is slanted.
Right.
So it makes it very difficult. You know, your chairs might swivel around, so what you're forced to do, and so I occasionally have, you know, given presentations at Owen, and so our business school, most of the classrooms are structured with fixed tables and fixed chairs that swivel, but it's a more awkward arrangement because the floors are slanted. And so, you know, it isn't as congenial as being able to literally pull your chairs up to a table and all be on the same level. So it's doable if you're in a room with fixed chairs that swivel. If you're in a room with fixed chairs that don't swivel, you know, on a 360, you know, basis, you can't do it.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know what you do. I find that
you can often have students turn to their neighbor, right? You can have pair work.
Pair work. Right? And I don't do much
but
pair
work.
But
beyond pair work, if you have groups of size 3, 4, 5, or mm-hmm. 6, I find that you need some furniture that supports
right.
that.
Right. And I do groups of 3 to 6.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Corbett. This has been a lot of fun.
It was
thanks
a treat.
Yeah.
Thanks
for being on our podcast.
All right.
That was Corbett Doyle, lecturer in organizational leadership here at Vanderbilt University. You can find Corbett's contact info in the show notes. You've been listening to Leading Lines, a podcast on educational technology from Vanderbilt University. For more on the podcast, visit our website, leadinglinespod.com, or follow us on Twitter at @LeadingLinesPod. We would love to hear what you thought about this episode, so feel free to reach out to us. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. We hope you'll subscribe. I'm your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.